Jimmy Harris here. I'm sure y'all have, we've all been checking out him at, on Sunday mornings. That's been great. Enjoyed it.
I tell him that somebody got him confused with Stevens last week at small group.
He hears that a lot, I bet.
Nope.
Wait, he was making sure the microphone was on.
Yeah. Let me delete that real quick.
Is it on?
It's going.
Okay.
It'll pick up everything, I promise. All right, we're set? Okay. So, hi, I'm Jimmy Harris. I guess I'll give you guys a quick, who am I? I grew up in northern Idaho at the base of the Cascade Mountains. So our home was right at the very edge of the Cascades. And so growing up, beautiful place. And when I was about 11, my parents got a box of food on their doorstep from a church. And so we started going to a little Methodist church in town based off of someone's just kindness of giving us food. His business was in trouble, and eventually he went bankrupt, and we had to move to Seattle. So I grew up in the Seattle area for, you know, all of junior high school. Ended up going out to seminary in Cincinnati, where I met my wife, and we'd been married for 2 weeks when my brother-in-law asked me to come out to plant a church back in Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, where I'd grown up as a little kid. And so I said, and the whole time he's talking, my wife was thinking, there's no way we're going to do that. And after he walked off, I was like, I really think we need to do this. Like, you know, let's pray about it. But I really feel. And she looked at me like, what? I'm not moving to Idaho. So she came with me. It's, you know, miraculously came with me. And she said, you dragged me out to that godforsaken country, right? Out in the middle of nowhere, so far from her family. And so it was, the church grew from about 25 people to 8,000 in 7 years. It was a miraculous just outpouring of God's mercy on people. And most of the people were first generation Christians. And so right away we had a huge problem, which was tons of people coming to the Lord, but no way on Sunday morning were we going to be able to disciple everybody, which is true anyways. But we were forced to admit it. So discipleship became the core vision, purpose, direction of the church out of a reaction to kind of this overwhelming, like, all these people coming to Christ. And then we started focusing on small groups. And that's kind of, so I just grew up in ministry in small groups. And I'm the small group pastor here at Grace Chapel. So my heart, my passion, what I love is just discipleship in small groups. And so real simply, it's just like that was Jesus' strategy to reach the world. That was his method. That was his way. And so that's what we're going to be talking about tonight is discipleship. But that's kind of what brought me to discipleship. Now, Mark Bright, who's the executive pastor here. Have you met Mark yet? Big beard, you know, Mark. He attended the church that we helped to start out in northern Idaho all those years back. He went there for 10 years. And just so you get to know the heart of Mark, I want to brag on Mark for a second. He served in the children's ministry for 10 years, and he took a little pack of boys, and he followed them through every grade, all the way from elementary, all the way through high school, and just really discipled these kids. And, so we have a really good relationship, good friendship, and so that's how I ended up in Tennessee. So that's my whole circle around the United States. You guys can ask me any questions you want to know later. And no, I have not made any progress on my house, in case you were wondering. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk for a while about discipleship, and then you guys are going to discuss it with each other, and then you can ask me any questions you want to. We're on page 45 if you want to go ahead and go there in your book. 45. Now,
anybody has fill-in-the-blank anxiety, the answers are in the back if I miss something. I'm not a follow-it-exactly kind of guy. So, like, the first fill-in-the-blank, if you want to grow to spiritual maturity, right, you really need to know, you know, what is a disciple. If you don't know what a disciple is, you can't make disciples. You can't be a disciple, right? And so definitions are really important so that we really know what we're shooting for. There was a marksman in the Olympics. It was about three Olympics ago, maybe four. And he lined up for his final shot. And if he made the shot, he was going to get the gold medal. So he pulls the trigger. He knows he hit it. You know, these guys don't miss, but by a little bit. And so he's high-fiving his buddies, and he's celebrating because he knows he just won the gold medal. And they came over, and they said, sorry, you know, you didn't hit the target at all. And he's like, what do you mean I didn't hit the target? I mean, these guys don't miss the target. So they watch it in slow motion a bunch of times, and they're looking at the gun, and they're trying to figure out if there was a misfire because it didn't even hit the target. Or did he miss the whole target? And what it turned out was he shot a perfect shot. But it was in the target next to his, in the next lane over. So he lined up perfect on a target, and he hit what he was aiming for. It was just the wrong one. So he went from getting the gold medal to the bronze in one shot. And that's kind of what's going on in ministry, in churches, really in America today, is that, you know, you really do hit what you aim for. And if you don't know what you're shooting for, you can't hit it. Or even the bigger problem is you do hit what you're aiming for. Because it's not like we're not making disciples, right? We are making disciples no matter what. No matter what, we're making disciples because everyone's looking to us and they're saying, what does a Christian look like? And then that's the Christian we've passed down. Whatever it is we're shooting for. And the problem is, if I was to say, all right, everybody write down a definition of what a disciple is. If I said, everybody write it down, we would get 5 or 6, 7, maybe 10 different answers. We used to do this with the church staffs. We'd bring in churches and we would have them sit down and we'd have their staff sit down and we'd say, everybody write down a definition of a disciple. Every single one was totally different. And it's like, well, how in the world are you as a church going to make a disciple if you don't even know what one is and you don't even have an agreed upon definition of what you're shooting for? The problem is we're all shooting for different things. Maybe you're shooting for, like, nice people, right? Or good people. Or people that really know their Bibles. Or people who come to church. Or you can just fill in the blank. There's a lot of targets. You can really figure out what somebody's target is by what they talk about all the time, and especially by what they celebrate. Whatever someone celebrates is what their target is. So again, it gives you a little bit of a picture about what the target might be. And so that's why we're going to have you're going to walk out of here with a really simple, clear definition of what a disciple is, so that, you know, if you're going to be a part of Grace Chapel, and you probably, some of you already have been for a long time, maybe even longer than I've been here, because I've only been here for 3 years, we all want to be on the same page, so we're all shooting for the same thing, we're all going in the same direction, we're all trying to make disciples, and we agree. Like, this is what we're trying to do. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So, I'm going to use a triangle just kind of to help you remember it. But Jesus says it perfect, you know. He says, come, follow me, and I will make you fishers of men, right? And so that's Matthew 4:19. I'm just going to write that down right here. Matthew 4:19. The story from Matthew 4:19, you can find that in Luke 5. And the story is this, that Jesus walks up. And they're cleaning their nets on the beach because they already did their fishing in the night. And Jesus is teaching on the shore, and he actually asked to get into Simon Peter's boat, who's eventually going to be Peter, right? He gets in Simon's boat, and he's teaching from the boat to the shore, and he says, go out to the deep water and throw out your nets. Now, they just finished cleaning their nets. So this would be a huge pain. This would be like reopening the store. This would be like getting all your tools back out or whatever your equivalent of starting over would be.
he had to get everything back out. And so he says to him, he says, all right, master, we fished all night. We didn't catch anything. And plus, he's a professional. He's an expert fisherman. You know, he knows Jesus is a carpenter. But he says, master, because you say so, I'll do it. And he goes out, throws out the nets. And you guys know the story. He caught so many fish that the nets are tearing and breaking, and they're filling up the boat with fish, and the boat is so full of fish that it starts to sink. And they're calling other boats over. So this is the scene. Can you picture it? So it's just up to your hips and fish, and fish are flipping around and everywhere. And here's Simon standing there, and he's looking around, and he knows this is miraculous. There's no doubt in his mind. And he looks at Jesus, and you know what he says? He says, get away from me. I'm a sinful man. You know, get away from me. And Jesus says, he looks at him, and he says, no, Peter, come follow me, and I will make you a fisher of men. You know, that's the scene where we find out that right at the very beginning when Jesus invites, you know, he's just inviting them. He doesn't wait till later to tell them, all right, you know, we want you to become a Christian. Guess what a Christian means, right? And then we fill in the blanks. He gave the definition right at the invitation. So right at the very beginning, it was very clear. He's saying, I want you to follow me, right? And I will make you a fisher of men. That's three pieces, right? Follow me, and I will make you a fisher of men. So all we're going to do is we're just going to take that verse, and you guys will never forget it, right? Follow me, right? And I will make you fisher of men. That's Matthew 4:19, right? So follow, and I will make you means that you are some way, and you're going to be some other way, right? So change and mission. Fisher of men. This is our definition of what a disciple is. It's just straight from Jesus. It's like someone who follows Jesus, is being changed by Jesus, and is on mission with Jesus. So we have to kind of unpack each one. The first one, follow. Now when I say follow, I mean an actual, intimate, personal relationship with Jesus Christ. Because Jesus is alive. And because Jesus is alive, because that was the good news for a long time. Like, people didn't have crosses necklaces. They would have had empty tomb necklaces. Because that was the good news, right? They would have walked around and been like, Jesus rose from the dead, right? That was the good news. And they would have said, Jesus rose from the dead. He's alive, is what that means. And he's moving and doing things and speaking still. And you can actually see him moving and doing things and alive and well. So this one's really important, because if you have a present tense relationship with Jesus, like Jesus is showing me, fill in the blank, like if I was to say, what's God showing you right now? And you'd say, well, I mean, I don't know. But, you know, 10 years ago, God was showing me something. Or, you know, maybe last year, I really felt like God was showing me to do this. Or, you know, maybe it's been a really long time since you really feel like God's been showing you anything. You have, like, some past tense, God speaking to me stuff. But if you want to be a disciple of Jesus, you have to have present tense relationship with him, because he's still speaking, right? Like, when you get up every morning, he's there. Like, he's ready to guide and lead and move and teach us. He's still saying, come follow me and I will make you fishers of men. He's saying it to us. He's saying, follow me and I will make you a fisher of men. Does that make sense? So following Jesus is about having a present tense, personal, intimate relationship with Jesus. And going, all right, God, what are you saying? So if you go to church on Sunday and you go, well, what's God saying? Or you open up your Bible, get up in the morning and you open your Bible and you say, Jesus, what are you doing? What are you saying? What are you speaking to me right now? That's present tense. Does that make sense? So following Jesus absolutely depends on the fact that Jesus is risen from the dead. It's based in the resurrection of Jesus. You know, you can't have a present tense relationship with the dead Jesus. Right? Jesus is alive. So follow Jesus. We're being changed by Jesus. You can't follow Jesus and stay the way that you are. Or at least you shouldn't. Right? You should start looking different over time, shouldn't you? Like, if a year from now, how many of you guys want to be exactly like you are 1 year from now? Right? You know, how about, you know, 6 months from now? You know, do you have a plan for that? It's like, I would like to not be exactly the same shape. Right? Or, you know, maybe you're like, man, I would like to be, you know, a little bit more patient. I would, you know, or maybe you're thinking, God's, you know what God's been working on me on? And you could just fill in the blank. Everybody's got something that God's showing you right now. And you're saying, He wants to change that. And that's really good news because He said, I will make you. Come follow me and I will make you. You don't have to carry all the weight here. Jesus is going to do it. Which was really good news to Peter because Peter was like, get away from me, right? I don't think that's just Peter. I mean, I think if we get close to a holy God and we get a taste of who Jesus is, the first thought we have is not, yeah, I got this. The first thought we have is, oh boy, I got nothing. You know, I'm a mess. I'm in trouble. Anybody? Mm-hmm. You know? So change is completely dependent on following Him, right? You're not going to change if you just decide to go your own way. But ultimately, there's going to be a time where you're walking with the Lord, and He's going to be going this way, and you're going to want to go that way. And that's where you part ways with Jesus. That's not just where you decided not to do that thing. The person of Jesus keeps moving. And you're going that way. And so you can decide not to do what He's saying. You know, without obedience to Jesus, you're going to stay the way that you are. 1 year from now, I guarantee it, you will be exactly the same. So mission here, usually when I say the word mission, people think of like Africa, somewhere far, far away. And, you know, in fact, I actually met a missionary from Africa in Spring Hill. And they had sent him to Spring Hill, Tennessee. And he was planting a church. And he was trying to make disciples. And I thought, huh, that's weird, you know. I thought we were the Bible Belt, you know. It's like, they sent him to, my first thought was really like, well, they sent him to the wrong place. Because there's a church over there, and there's a church over there, and there's a church over there. But they didn't send him over here because there needed to be more churches. They sent him over here because there needed to be more disciples. And they're very aware. And by the way, thank goodness we sent some people to Africa, right? Like, that's also a good thing, right? Some people went to Africa to raise up Christians. And there are true, living disciples in Africa now being sent here. And you know, that's awesome, right? That's the kingdom. But mission is not going to Africa. Mission is just wherever you are. Very few of us are going to be called to go somewhere else. You're probably going to live where you are. Right? He might say, move to Minnesota. Right? There might be one of you that moves to Africa, but we can't all leave, right? We can't all be Paul. Like, we can't all pick up and go. But as we go, which is the way, you know, in Matthew 20 it says, go therefore and make disciples. Jesus didn't say go make churches. Jesus said go make disciples and then churches will happen. But you can make churches and not make disciples. You see that? You can make a church and not make disciples, but you can't make disciples and not end up having churches. So Jesus says go make disciples, and the language there is as you go, as you're going. So like in your regular life, when you're on mission, you're actually paying attention to, well, what's God doing? What does He want me to do? That's all. Mission isn't complicated or somewhere else. It's always simple, and it's based in obedience to Jesus Himself. So you're saying, Jesus, what are you doing? I'm following you. I know I'm not up for the task. I'm a mess, and I need you. And there's stuff right now around you. You guys already have a mission. You already have people in relationship with you. And sometimes some of you are called to really build up believers, and sometimes you're really in a position to reach out to the lost. And sometimes it's your own kids, and sometimes it's the neighbor. But it's wherever you are. It's like, what is God doing where I'm at? And this is inherent, by the way, in mission, is that whatever you give somebody else, they have it. And they could give it to somebody else. So it goes one, two, three generations. So Jesus said, come follow me and I will make you a fisher, right? Peter will be a fisher of what? Yeah. Men. These guys. So Peter, number one, is going to reach some people. Number two, who will be able to reach number three, which means that if whatever kind of disciples we're making, it needs to be simple. You need to be able to hand it off, and then someone could turn around and then give it to somebody else. And if they can't give it to somebody else, it's not discipleship. So if it's read these 62 books, it's not discipleship, right? Or if it's fill in the blanks on all these little documents, it's like, well, then what about people who can't read? Like, it has to be simple enough that I could give it to you and then you could give it to somebody else. Like, when we say make disciples, it just means that they can do it. So do you see the third generation piece there? Why that's so important? Because over and over and over again, historically, in the church, we do this. Where we make a disciple who can't make a disciple. And so you have one generational success, which is wonderful, I reached you, but you can't reach anybody because I gave it to you in a way that you can't hand it off. And so if Sunday morning was the only method that we were going to reach the entire world, we'd be in huge trouble because everybody can't do that, right? I can't turn around and do what happened on Sunday. You know, I don't have the time to prepare to do that. I can't take it and work on it that long and work up a speech and give it away to somebody else. So Sunday morning's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about that what I'm learning from Jesus, I need to be able to hand off to other people in simple ways that then they have it. So when you're thinking about your kids, that's really important, especially because you're saying, hey, here's a cool thing. Or, you know, maybe you're thinking about your grandkids. Here's a great thing that I want to hand to you. Is it so complicated they couldn't turn around and give it to their little brother? Or then go home and explain to their mom? Then it's too complicated. Like, rethink it. So, does that make sense?
Yes.
So all three of these are really important. The follow piece, the change piece, and the mission piece. If you take one away, it doesn't work. People always give me a hard time. They're like, really, Jimmy, why does it have to be three? You know, my definition of a disciple is just somebody who follows Jesus, and then I'm just done. Because if you follow Jesus, then you'll be changed, and if you'll be changed, then you will definitely be on mission. The problem is that's not true, because people do one or two of these all the time. They go, all right, I personally have a very cool, intimate relationship with Jesus, the end. They do it all the time. I love Jesus, and Jesus loves me, and I hope other people see it in me. Right? Or I really love Jesus, but I look exactly the same. So you might want to go back to this one, right? Rethink that, but right here you go. I don't feel any different. Years have gone by, and I'm still the same. I should start to ask a question, right? Something's not working here. I should not be exactly the same 5 years later if I'm following Jesus. Or maybe you go, yeah, I'm following Jesus. He's changing my life. The end. I don't give that to anybody. You know, I don't really have any other person I hand that to for the rest of my life. And this is very common. It's like, I mean, everyone in this room can relate to maybe going, man, I really do need to do the last thing God showed me, right? It's like, man, I really feel like God's not speaking to me. Maybe you didn't do the last thing he showed you. So maybe, you know, people are like, yes, he's speaking to you. Maybe he's not. Right? Maybe he spoke to you, past tense, and you weren't listening, right? And you need to go back to square one. What was the last thing he said? And do that thing. And that's it. It doesn't have to be complicated. It's like, you know, what God was showing me is that I needed to, and fill in the blank, and just go back there. Or maybe you're like, man, you know, I really do live like Jesus is dead, and I'm reading about him. or, you know, I don't really believe he is around doing things, moving, alive. Right? Maybe you need to go here. Or maybe you're kind of like, eh. In the mission category, you're like, I'm not being intentional at all. You know, I'm really not being intentional at all. I just am a Christian. And no one really knows unless they ask me very specific, detailed questions. I would never hand off anything about Jesus. They'd have to have a really good list of really good questions that probably someone else would need to write and give them, and they would have to then turn around and ask me those questions in a really particular order, right? But I'm not intentionally handing anything to anyone. The best part of my whole week, I'm not exaggerating, by far, is Matt Bennett, the sound guy, is right now teaching my Gospel of John class. And getting him ready to teach that class was the best thing I did all week. It was more important than the sermon by a mile. And it's like, he's in there, and he learned things, and he's doing things because I handed something to him in an easy way that he could turn around and he could just do it. You know, simple, right? So this is real, and it's powerful, and it's the best thing you'll ever do. You know, this is the most fun thing, is when, the best thing isn't when this person gets it. That's fun. Like when you share something with somebody about Jesus, and they're like, I get that, that's awesome, and they get a hold of it. That's neat. It's the grandchildren that's the best part, right? Mm-hmm. Anybody got grandkids? Mm-hmm. That's the best. When you give something to your kids, and they can give it, and they're handing it off to your grandkids, now that's the good stuff. That's the gold. It's when Matt's up there teaching these guys, and these guys come over to me and go, man, we don't want you to come back. Right? Matt was great, you know, and that's that third layer when you hand something off, and then it's like, now that takes over the world. And Jesus knows this. It's not like people invented, you know, multi-level marketing and all these different things, or Facebook or any of those things. Jesus knew, right, that this is nuclear. The third level, if you can go one, two, take over the whole world. That is really how it happens. But a lot of times you don't get to see this. You know, it's fun when you do, but when you hand something off to somebody, and then that reaches this person, that reaches somebody else, that reaches somebody else, and then you find out about it. It's pretty rare. But it is important that we're intentional, that when we hand things off to people, that they can take it. So that's discipleship. That's target. You want your target to be specific. So that's why I'm being so specific, painstaking. See why I'm being so detailed about it? So a disciple of Jesus is somebody who follows Jesus, right? Is being changed by Jesus and is on. Yeah, that's the definition. So if you go to Haiti on a mission trip, you'll teach that to somebody. So don't write that down. So the reason why is because if you don't have a definition of a disciple, you can't make any. So now I'm going to talk about process, because process is kind of messier, though. So you want your definition to be specific, but you want your process to be messy. That's just good practical logic, right? Because that's how things really go. Say, Jimmy, that sounds nice, but how does it really go? Right? And so we're going to talk about process a little bit. Is there a fill in the blank you guys need? Anybody? All right. So, discipleship is a process that we're all in. Right? It's like when you walk up to the mall and you come up to the map at the mall and you look at it. What do you have to know to use it?
Where you are. Where you are.
And where you want to go. That's all you got to know. In fact, it's the most important thing that we're going to walk out of tonight with, are the answer to those two questions. It's like, where am I at? And where am I trying to go? That's all I need to know. And then you can use a mall map, right, if you walk up to it and you ask those questions. But if you don't have that little red dot, it's not very useful. So I'm going to teach you a process, but if you don't figure out where you're at on the process, it's not going to do you any good. you know, if you just try to use it for somebody else, you know, like if you, and you don't know where you are, it's not going to do you any good. So discipleship is a process. We're all in it. It's very messy. The language I'm going to use is family language because you'll notice in Acts, just a little ways into Acts, the word disciple disappears. And you never see it again in the New Testament. You know why? It's like they changed the plan and they decided not to make disciples. No. Right? Or you know what I mean? Or it's because they were reaching, first, the Jewish people totally understood what a disciple was because they knew what a rabbi was and they knew what a rabbi's student was. But the second you go out into the Greek culture and you say, you need to be a disciple, they would look at you like, what? Just like maybe the typical person in a church might. And I say, what's a disciple? And they go, I don't know. How do you make one? I don't know. Have you ever made a disciple? Maybe. Right? That's exactly how they felt. They're like, I don't even know what you're talking about. And so when he moved out into the Greek culture, they had to change language to something they would all understand that would make sense. And that language is family. Everybody understands family. Everybody grows up. Everybody grows up everywhere. We used to have a really complicated process. We would explain discipleship process at our church that we'd be like, first you share the whatever, and then you complex the whatever, and we had this really complicated thing. And then we went to Africa. This is a true story. And they were like, what are you talking about? Share Christ, connect people, relate through, and I mean, they had no idea what we were talking about. And so when we had to go, okay, well, if it doesn't work in Africa, it's probably not true in America. Right? So we had to say, well, what's simple? And that's where this kind of emerged. It's like, oh, how about we talk family like the Bible does? Because the Bible, when it talks about church, it talks about family. Like, the family is the church. The church is the family, right? So I'm going to walk you through sort of the process, which is a dead person, right? Born, an infant, a child, a young adult, and a parent. You guys have that already filled in on your books. So we all have gone through, to some level, this process. Maybe you're at the grandparent stage of the process, but you've all kind of got, you get the idea, even if you haven't done it all, you've seen it all. We have examples, even in the front row here. So I'm just going to walk you through really quick. So, you know, don't overthink this. Think simple, okay? What's a dead person like?
Worldly.
No, I'm talking about an actual dead person, like if I laid him out right here on the floor.
Not breathing.
A dead person. Stiff. What?
Not breathing.
Not breathing. No, lifeless.
Dead.
Yes.
Right? Quiet.
Quiet. Very quiet. What?
Silent.
Silent, yes. Did you get the idea? What about birth? Did, guys, be quiet. Ladies? What's birth like?
Oh my gosh.
Epidural.
Epidural. What else?
Painful.
Joyful.
Miracle.
Expensive.
I warned you. It's expensive.
Expensive. Shocking.
Gross.
Yeah. Thank you.
Complex.
Complex. Hey, I warned him.
I know.
Complex. What? Anything else?
Messy, necessary,
right? Lots of expectation builds up to the moment, right? But the, you know, the moment is shocking in a lot of ways and amazing and beautiful, right? What about an infant? Like a little tiny infant. Like everybody look at this.
Happy.
Precious. Happy, precious.
Teachable.
Show them.
Helpless.
Simple. Helpless, simple.
Delicate,
what?
Fragile.
Dependent.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Needy.
Yep.
Sweet. They have that little smell on the top of their head that's so good.
Exhausting.
What'd you say?
Exhausting.
Exhausting, yes. They take a lot of energy, don't they? Mm-hmm. What about a child? Like, I'm talking like elementary, tons of energy, about that big. A child.
Unpredictable.
Curious.
Unpredictable, curious. Eager. What'd you say?
Busy.
They are busy. Even my three-year-old, I guess he's kind of here, is, I mean, he colors, but he's going to work to color. You know what I mean? He gets his little piece of paper out, and he's like, I want to color. And then he gets his things out, and he's working. He fills that whole page until the whole thing is solid colored. He's not really aiming for the lines. He's just filling the whole thing up. And, yeah, they're busy, and they're working hard. And when they play hard. What else? Children?
Sponges.
Sponges. They learn more than we ever will in about 2 years in the rest of our lives. That's amazing. They're extraordinary little sponges. Anything else?
They're simple.
Simple? Very trusting. It's a gullible age. Yeah? What about a young adult? We're talking about, like, gangly stage.
Irritating.
Right here. Irritating. Yes. What else? What? Independent. They're sort of pushing for that independence, right? What else? Children?
In need of guidance.
In need of guidance.
Exploratory.
Very much. Trying things, exploring, checking things out.
Impressionable.
Impressionable, definitely.
Know-it-alls.
They are sophomores, right? Little young fools.
Exciting.
Yeah, they are the passionate group. They're like the take over the world people,
rebellious.
Right?
Rebellious.
Rebellious.
Hormonal.
Hormonal, yes. Totally. Totally. That's a good one. What else?
Clueless.
Yeah, they think they know a lot more than they actually experientially do, right? Mm-hmm. How about a parent?
Exhausted.
Tired. That's always first. That's always first. Tired. What else? Busy.
Wise,
yeah. They've learned some stuff.
Proud.
Mentors. They're mentors. Anything else? What does a parent like?
Experience.
Yeah, they've got some experience. Might be good, might not be.
Regrets.
Regrets.
Responsible.
Yeah. They're more responsible usually than the young adult. Not always, but usually. More responsible than the young adult.
Independent.
Intentional.
Yeah, intentional. This is what I want. This is what I expect.
Strict.
Yep, strict. Sure. So, now actually we're going to switch to spiritual, and it's all the same. Right? We all go through the same process spiritually. In fact, Jesus uses this language too, not just Paul. Paul uses family language when he talks about spiritually growing. He says, I wish you would stop being babies. Stop drinking milk. And go on to some more solid food. He's talking about Christians that were acting like spiritual babies and they needed to grow up. Or Jesus said to Nicodemus in the night, they're sitting and having a little talk, and Jesus is saying, in fact, you can't even enter the kingdom of heaven unless you're born again. Born. And he's like, how is that possible? How am I going to go back into my mother's womb and do that again? And Jesus starts to explain to him how God works. Let me explain it to you. He's talking about a process that has to start somewhere, right? It has to start somewhere. And for Nicodemus to get saved, he's got to be born again, right? He's got to go from spiritually dead to born. In fact, Matt is teaching right now that Nicodemus... who at first said, I don't know what you're talking about, is actually the one who gives his, gives Jesus his tomb. And he's there at the cross, taking Jesus down off the cross. You ever notice that?
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same Nicodemus that Jesus was talking to, who's the spiritual leader. You know, we always kind of give the Pharisees a hard time. Well, he was a Pharisee that got saved. So he actually did get born again. It looks like he believed in Jesus. Gave him a tomb. So, born, infant, you know, this is sort of like the stage spiritually where you're kind of like, you know, soaking it in, but everything has to come to you. You're not going to go and get anything. So, I've heard people say, you know, I stopped going to that church because I wasn't being fed. which, I mean, might be a good point, right? I mean, what their point might be that it was milk all the time and I was hungry, but I think that what they're, sometimes what they're saying isn't really an indictment on the church, and it's an indictment on the fact that they have not learned how to eat. And here they are, they've been in the church for 10, 15, 20 years, and they're going, I'm not being fed. And they're going, on their little spiritual table, and they're going, put the food in my mouth, right? Last time I needed to be fed, I was a little bit different. So that's one of those things spiritually we kind of have to pick up over time. You have to start to go, okay, well, I need to learn how to feed myself, right? An infant, though, can't. It's really mean, though, to say to an infant, an actual spiritual infant, go make disciples. Or get a job. Here's a, get in, why don't you get involved in something? Or, you know, why are you being so selfish? It's like, well, babies don't know. Well, spiritual babies don't either. So if, and I do small groups, so I'm always thinking about small groups. If you happen to be in a small group, you're going to get all of these in your group. You'll have somebody in there that comes in and goes, feed me. Right? You'll get kind of the child who's like soaking it all up and fun and like, oh, yeah, that's cool. And what does that say? And really, like, you know, I heard on Oprah that da-da-da-da, and they're like, they're excited about everything. They're like this little spiritual child or maybe a young adult. You know, this is where maybe people kind of start to question a little bit. And wait, a lot of times we say, man, if you're challenging things, if you're questioning things, if you're confused, then you're not spiritually mature. Well, that's not true. You're probably figuring stuff out. You're struggling with it and really looking at it and learning. And if you start to doubt and have struggles, you're probably growing. Because that's what teenagers do. They go, well, I don't know if I agree with you about that. Let me try that myself. Right? But, all right, Pastor, you're so smart. You come over into my life and you show me how to do it. So then they start to question things, kind of struggle with things, figuring things out. This is a questioning stage spiritually. Can be dark, you know, but it's also a visionary time spiritually for folks. This is where you start to get a vision for who am I and what am I here for. And that's a lot of, by the way, what step two is about, is spiritually, like, what, how am I wired and what, where do I fit as far as my spiritual gifts and where I would fit in the church. This is a kind of figure out where I fit, what am I going to do with my life kind of spot. And then the parent spot is really, you know, what do you have to be a spiritual parent?
Spiritual children.
You just have to have children, right? And this is the good news about being a spiritual parent is nobody knows how to be a parent. Right? Nobody knows what they're doing. Everybody's figuring it out. Everybody blows it. Everybody makes mistakes. It's exactly what Jesus was saying to Peter. He's like, hey, I'm going to grow you up into a spiritual parent. He's like, get away from me. I'm a great big train wreck. And Jesus says, come follow me and I will make you a fisher of men. He's saying, I'm going to grow you up into spiritual maturity. But he doesn't feel like that. It's like handing somebody a baby. They don't know what they're doing, but they'll figure it out. The only thing you have to be a spiritual parent is someone you're intentionally help grow. You don't have to know what you're doing, and you don't have to be an expert, and you don't have to have it figured out. So I'm not defining parent by have it all together and have everything in the checklist. I'm saying a spiritual parent is just someone who is intentionally making an effort to help somebody grow up. They've taken responsibility. They've said, you know, the people around me are there on purpose, and I'm supposed to help them. Do you hear what I'm saying about that, about spiritual parent?
Yeah.
I don't have a checklist for parent because nobody knows what they're doing when it comes to parenting. I don't. If we had a checklist, it'd be made up anyways. So we go around this little wheel. Are you starting to get a kind of a feel for where you are?
Mm-hmm.
You kind of know where you hang out? I didn't describe them all super well. Any questions about that before I kind of, I'm going to send you into some discussion about the wheel. Anything? You know, I wish that spiritual growth was like this linear process, where over time we grow spiritually like this. You know, year one, year two, year three. But that's not really how it goes. It goes like a big old squiggly line. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So this might look linear, but you know what? This morning, I'm not theoretically saying this, I'm saying actually, this is a confession, Cassie, if you're listening. This morning, I kind of acted like a little spiritual baby for about 15 minutes with my wife. She pointed out something that I needed to know. And I was like, I acted like a little baby. You know? And then the same day, later that afternoon, I was teaching Matt how to teach the Gospel of John tonight. You see what I mean? So I know we bounce around a lot on here, even in a day. But in general, we kind of live somewhere, and you know it. In general, if you added up all your days and divided them by these things right here, you would say, well, kind of, I'm sort of between here and here. Or, you know, I'm sort of not really a child, but I'm not really a young adult. Or maybe you're like halfway between right here. Get your red dot on there somewhere. It's like, where are you? And so give me a nod if you know right where you are most of the time. Okay, you know? Anybody want to share? Where are you kind of at most of the time?
I tend to hover between parent and young adult.
Right? There. And then kind of go back and forth?
With a flair for infant.
And an occasional infant moment.
Well, it is a circle, so.
So any other questions before we break into groups? Because what I'm going to have you talk about is real simple. It's like, where are you at? And what do you need to grow? Like, where are you at and what do you need? Yep.
How does your actual age and maturity level play a role in this?
It doesn't relate at all. And that's what's so weird. Like, my 12-year-old, and, you know, can be right there. Mm-hmm. And I know people that have been Christians for 30 years and they're spiritual infants. Mm-hmm. It's like when Jesus was talking to Nicodemus, who was a spiritual, like as far as the Israel was concerned, he was an expert in the law. And Jesus is like, you don't know anything. You have to start over. And I mean, he knew a lot. But he was spiritually not even born yet. So, yeah, the age doesn't have anything to do with it. I got home from my sermon the other day on the fear of God, and my 12-year-old was like, I don't know if I get this fear of God stuff. You know, he was like, I don't know. And my 15-year-old said, if you were in a hurricane, and it was powerful and tearing everything to pieces, but you knew you were totally safe, that's the fear of the Lord. And my 12-year-old was like, okay, I get it. I was like, wow, that was fantastic. Much better than my examples. But I mean, he explained it in a way that he totally got it. And then I tried to explain it more, and he was like, I liked it better with the hurricane thing. All right, so get into groups of about 4 or 5 and talk about where are you at most of the time. And what do you need to kind of just move to the next spot? And you can apply most things practically. You know, what does it take for a child to become a young adult? It's usually pretty much the same stuff. As real, you know, real maturity. All right, good? All right, discuss it, and then we'll get back together and we'll talk about it.